Welcome to the Not All Better Show. I'm host Paul Vogelzang, and this is episode 223. Today's show is part of our food, nutrition, and travel series, and it's another great one. We've got an important story, an interview with Kimball Musk about farming. That's right, farming. And this newly devised technology by Musk and the new growing methods are truly needed right now.
Well, you know, when I first started, I have a restaurant in Colorado called The Kitchen, and we started it about 15 years ago. We really struggled to find food that tasted good. The industrial food system is literally designed for food to ship thousands of miles. It's not designed to taste good. It's usually high-calorie, low-nutrition food. And it's a lot of the cause of a lot of problems we have in food today. And if you can grow the food really close to home, if you grow close to the restaurant, the food just tastes so much better. So that was sort of my initial thinking was we just need to get food closer to our community. So, I mean, anyone who's grown in their own backyard knows how much better it tastes. You harvest right then, you eat it right then. It truly tastes so much better. And when I came across this technology, it was about 3 or 4 years ago, the ability to grow food indoors that truly tastes better. Obviously, indoor farming has been around for a long time, but not this new technology. It just tastes so much better. But it is absolutely delicious, so much better than anything shipped in from thousands of miles away. We created this technology that enables a young farmer to do a completely closed environment so they can grow any food they want, any greens they want. We have some radishes as well, but for the most part, it's greens. And they can design it, literally design it the way a chef might like it or what they think their customer might like. We have one farmer who took, and this is so cool, he took his container and he is able to control the weather so he can decide what time the sun rises, what time the sun sets, everything. And in Italy in 2009, there was this vintage of basil, just the basil that we normally eat, but that particular year is quite a famous year for basil in Italy. And he went into the weather records and recreated the summer of Italy 2009 inside of his container. What time the sun came up, what time the sun set, what days did it rain, how much oxygen was in the air, what was the temperature, what was the humidity, everything. And now sells the most premium basil in the whole city of New York because it just tastes so much better.
That, of course, is our guest today, Kimball Musk. You all know Kimball Musk, brother of SpaceX and Tesla founder Elon Musk, and they share a creative, entrepreneurial gene. Kimball is doing something very important right now here on Earth, and that's the future of farming. Kimball Musk is cited as a global social entrepreneur for his work to pursue an America where everyone has access to real food. He is considered a founding father of the modern food movement and one of the top people changing food in America. He owns The Kitchen Cafe, a family of community restaurants located across the American heartland. He has co-founded Big Green, that has built hundreds of outdoor classrooms called learning gardens in schoolyards. Kimball Musk also co-founded Square Roots, an urban farming accelerator in Brooklyn, New York. He currently sits on the board of Tesla, SpaceX, and Chipotle Mexican Grill. He's the younger brother of billionaire businessman Elon Musk and a major Tesla shareholder. Please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show via internet phone, Kimball Musk.
Courtney's been telling me about your circulation. I mean, it's extraordinary. So it's exciting to talk to you.
Well, it's nice to talk to you too, Kimball Musk. I really have done a great deal of reading about you and research. I think this idea of locally grown food, it has been getting quite a bit of press, but you're kind of taking it to a new level, but focused it. And your focus is really on kind of the Midwest. Why the Midwest?
I think there are a lot of good reasons for it. There's a lot of need in the Midwest. We call it the heartland, but in the middle of America. I think that it's been a part of the country that has been left behind or maybe just neglected for too many years. And I get frustrated where, I actually grew up in Africa, and I get frustrated that Americans will often spend their philanthropic dollars in Africa, but not in their backyard. And so, as an immigrant that loves America, and super, super happy to be here, I've decided to focus my philanthropic efforts on America, and where I think it's the most, where the need is most, as well as where I'm really welcomed, with open arms, as if you're in Middle America.
Growing up, I also read that you had a fairly significant accident, and that changed a little bit about your perspective and your passion and your even your direction professionally. What did that do to make you kind of rethink some of the things that you're doing now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in 2010, I went down a ski hill on an inner tube. Actually, with children's run, I was with my kids. And the chute flipped, and I landed at 35 miles an hour. My kids were fine, thank goodness. And I broke my neck. And it was a very serious break. I was paralyzed on my left. And for 2 days, I had a lot of time to think about my life and what I had been doing and what I wanted to do. And I went into surgery on Tuesday night. I broke my neck on Sunday. And I said, if I wake up tomorrow morning, I'm going to focus only on food, and I'm going to only do things that scale. I mean, obviously, I was doing food before that. The restaurants, my restaurant that was open already, but it just didn't scale. And I worked with school gardens that had been, a couple of school gardens a year. It just didn't scale. And so I came out of that on Wednesday morning, and I could walk again. And I had another 2 months where they kept me horizontal, but I knew I'd be able to walk again. I really never looked back.
What is it about school gardens that interests you? Because school gardens, of course, have been around forever. My audience certainly loves to do volunteer work. It seems like there's a component of volunteerism with school gardens. But it seems like there's also some problems that that occur around the development of school gardens and properly implementing them and even giving them almost the focus that they deserve. What is it that you're going to be doing a little differently with school gardens that makes it so important?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we've been supporting school gardens for years before that. It was actually one of our employees at the kitchen. They really wanted to work with school gardens. The restaurant was very successful, and we wanted to get back, so we supported him philanthropically. The problem with traditional school gardens, which we were supporting, was, they're made out of wood. They're usually run by a very passionate teacher, but the teachers retire, or a very passionate parent, the parents graduate, or a very passionate senior citizen in the community, but they may move away. And so there wasn't anything structurally that would keep the school garden going. And then the way they were built out of wood, so they would also, by its very nature, fall apart over time. And the other thing that would happen is they would put them in the corner of the schoolyard. And by doing that, made it very hard to water them, made them very hard to maintain. The maintenance folks would usually put a fence around them, which would make it even harder for teachers to teach in it, even harder for parents to participate and support. And so the school garden movement, I think, has really struggled until the Learning Garden product came along, because they're inherently not set up for success. And when I was horizontal in hospital, I said to myself, we have to come up with something that teachers will spontaneously want to teach in, that kids will spontaneously want to play in. We don't want to force kids into a garden. We want them to jump in and love it. And then the final one we wanted was a school garden that would be one that principals would see as a permanent addition to the schoolyard, a beautiful permanent addition. And the traditional school gardens, unfortunately, just would become an eyesore over time. And so we created the Learning Garden, and it has some amazing innovations to it. It's built out of, essentially giant Lego blocks. It's designed using the Fibonacci sequence, which is a mathematical equation that is the snail shell. So it exists in nature, and yet it's a mathematical equation. So you can, put these blocks together like an equation, but when you put them together, they look organic and they feel like a welcoming, natural part of the environment. We moved them to right on the playground or right outside a classroom so that teachers could easily get outside and kids could easily play in it during recess. We don't allow fences around them, but we've also designed them so you don't need a fence. They're 18 inches off the ground, so kids can run and enjoy the learning garden without doing any damage. Very easy to teach in as well as a result. But by moving them on the playground, not allowing a fence, making them spontaneous teach-in, across our network of almost just over 350 schools, we have 82% of teachers engaged in the learning garden, which is an extraordinary number to appreciate when traditional school gardens are quite hard and participation rates are quite low.
Some of these, you know, important subjects that my audience is very interested in, whether it be diabetics, whether it be the subject of nourishment. Sometimes that's very difficult for the 55 plus age community. The idea of sustainable food, that all ties in with this notion of school gardens. And then there's this overarching expansion that you're going through that really is focused on locally sourced food by 2020. Tell us a little bit about the expansion plans and where you're headed next.
Yeah, so our goal is to be 1,000 schools by 2020. That would mean about 20 communities. So we're currently in six communities: Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, Chicago, Memphis, LA, and Denver. And we're really excited about getting to that 1,000. To give you an idea of the scale, you know, in order to reach every child at need in America, you have to be at 100,000 schools. So for us, getting to 1% of our addressable market by 2020, is a very exciting goal for us.
You also have a real commitment to entrepreneurialism. Is that being engendered here? Is that being taught alongside of some of these other principles about sustainable development and locally sourced food?
Yeah, we have a wonderful program in high schools. So in elementary schools, we teach kids science through the growing of food. It's the most powerful lessons for kids. Not only does it improve their connection to food, because you can play with water and soil, and really science is so much a part of a young kid's life. But when they get to high school, we learned that science is relevant to some folks, but it's not interesting to everyone. And so we started playing around with the idea of entrepreneurship. And we created this concept of a real food lab, which is really just a learning garden that's twice the size. And these kids do an entrepreneurship course around what they should grow for local restaurateurs and companies like Google, are big buyers of our product, of the kids' product. They literally decide what to grow. They decide who to sell it to, and then they grow it. And it's an amazing lesson, but also these kids, they earn, $400 over the summer, which if you're a 16-year-old in South Chicago, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. That's a business.
That's business. It's amazing, mm-hmm. And I love it.
Of course, we're talking to Kimball Musk, a well-known name in industry, founder of The Kitchen and Next Door. Well, Kimball Musk, tell us what's for dinner tonight.
Tonight, I'm actually taking my fiance out for dinner in a friend of mine's restaurant that just got nominated as one of the top restaurants in the country. In fact, the award ceremony was last night. And I'm going to go in and just say hi to those guys and take my fiance out for dinner.
Well, good for you. Kimball Musk, founder of The Kitchen and Next Door, has been our guest today. Kimball, thanks so much, and good luck with all this expansion. I think this is a wonderful subject to take to the heartland.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kimball.
My thanks to our guest today, and please check out our website at notold-better.com for more information and conversation. And thanks to all of you, my wonderful audience, for your charming, encouraging, and advice-driven emails with show and topic suggestions. Please keep them coming at info@notold-better.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at notoldbetter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. We are Not Old Better there on Facebook. Podcasts of the Not Old Better Show are available on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio, also on Amazon's Alexa. How are you today, Alexa?
I'm doing great.
Alexa, play the Not Old Better podcast.
Getting the latest episode of the Not Old Better Show. Here it is from TuneIn.
You can always find us online at notold-better.com, where you can find all of our archives. You can share a link, you can get in touch, and I look forward to hearing from you. I'm Paul Vogelzang, and please, everyone, let's talk about better. The Not Old Better Show. Thanks, everybody.